Three, two, one.
I have
current geek.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Current Geek. This is Current Geek, the weekly proceedings of the meetings of the Frog Pants All Stars and you. To keep you current on all things that matter most, I'm Scott Johnson. He's Tom Merritt.
This is the best possible Friday evening activity that one can engage in.
Well, what Scott else would Johnson. There be? Let's do it. Let's do a quick non-scientific comparison of other things you could do.
You could eat a taco.
Okay, that's all right, but not quite up
not
there.
Not exclusive, right?
Okay, right.
That's the thing, right? Here's the thing about Current Geek. All of those other things you could think of that you could be doing, you can still be doing them.
Yeah.
Even the dirty ones.
Work on
while you're listening to Current Geek.
Work on your season 5 Diablo character. That's the dirty one we're referring to.
I was thinking the exact same thing.
Right while you're listening to the show. That voice you heard is one of our guests. Let's go through our guests. One new, one returning. On the line with us, Brian Schwartz, a.k.a. Ro, from the world of World of Warcraft podcasting and beyond. Good friend of the show, and I don't know what took us so long, but Ro, it's good to have you on, man.
It's great to be on. I'm really excited to be on. I said on my podcast a couple of days ago that I actually felt very comfortable, felt very good about being on this show and being on the same show as you, Scott. Mm. I'm like not intimidated by you at all. Good. I'm totally intimidated by Tom Merritt.
Oh, you should be. He's
yeah. No, it's all just puffery.
Yeah,
he's scared. About 2 years.
The guy behind me right here says I'm not prepared.
Yeah, talk to Jenny. She'll disabuse you of these notions.
Speaking of Jenny, I know what love is, Jenny.
Hello.
Jenny's on the line. She's been here now the most times again. No longer tied with Brian Ebbett. Sorry, Brian. Jenny stepped in last second. We had a storm caused change in the schedule. We had somebody who was scheduled today, and then this huge nor'easter, or whatever it is, caused him to not be able to be here. So, Jenny, as she often is willing to do, not that we wouldn't have her anyway, but she picked up the mallet and came into the front line of the war and smashed our enemies' heads.
Hulk smash!
Yeah. Welcome to the show. It's good to have you back.
Yay! This makes my day.
Oh, good. Well, hopefully all our days are made by the following headlines in the top of the show stuff.
Herbert Hoover, Secretary of Commerce in 1922, finds infant radio facilitates news gathering, as do many others in high public office.
Break it down, Tom.
Star Wars Episode 8 will not come out May 26, 2017 as planned, but will be delayed until December 15th, 2017. There are lots of rumors flying around. One of them is that Rian Johnson wants to rewrite parts of the script to focus more on the new characters like Rey and Finn. But for whatever reason, they are moving it into the land previously occupied by Avatar 2 and Ready Player One, and Avatar 2 has already moved off into next year.
Of course it did. I have let me throw another rumor into the works here that 18 months, 3 movies is too much. That maybe, just maybe, they realized, you know, it probably can't be 6 months after the last Star Wars movie.
But selfishly, I wanted it. I loved that idea.
I did too, but it just, to me, it seems untenable as a business strategy over time. It seems dangerous. Now, I get it. Okay, we've gotten to a place, and maybe we get there with Star Wars, but we've gotten to a place with our hero movies where we're kind of cool with multiples a year from the same studio, and it doesn't seem weird to us, and they're all in the same universe. Maybe Star Wars just needs to get a couple under their belt before they can get to this, like, every 6 months there's a new Star Wars movie after waiting 15 years and then another, well, I guess 10 years since 05. And then before that, what, 25 years? Like, huge gaps of time. Even between the prequels, there were big gaps of time. And to suddenly go to a new schedule of 18 months, 3 movies, that seems bonkers to me. Jenny, you're our resident Star Wars freak. So is Ro, but we'll let you start. Your take?
I am super cool with this. And the reason why is because when I was a super obsessed Lord of the Rings movie fan, when the first trilogy came out, it meant so much that it was coming at the holiday season. Mm. It was like a present every year. This year, Star Wars was like a present. I am cool with planning my calendar year around seeing Star Wars in December for the foreseeable future. And I am super excited that they are tweaking scripts. You've heard about script tweaks for both, both Rogue One and Episode 8 in the news lately. And I think that's great. It doesn't make me worried at all, because to me, that's like, we hear you. Like, we hear your enthusiasm, we hear your excitement, and we want to make sure that this is the best script that it can possibly
be. So you're you know a thing or two about script writing. Your husband's a script writer. You've done a fair amount of writing. Like, this is probably not unusual at all, but with a high-profile project like this, if this is the actual reason they delayed it, and it probably is, but this is should never be seen as a pejorative, right? This is a good thing.
No, you don't. There are many capable entities involved in this. Like, if there were less capable entities, I'd be worried, but you're talking about Kathleen Kennedy, who's now running Lucasfilm, who has been giving us quality adventure, action, sci-fi movies for her entire career. You're talking about J.J. Abrams, who is a really, really good writer, in addition to director. And you are talking about some really talented new writers and directors. The fact that they brought in Chris McQuarrie to do a polish, which is the rumor, it's not a fact, a rumor on Rogue One, is great news to me. That's like, they really care. They're just making sure everything is pitch perfect. I tell you what, if George Lucas had done that, for the prequels, we might never have had all of our angst. Just bring in the last other guy to like help it along.
What do you think, Ro? You like Star Wars. Would you prefer to have
who doesn't love Star Wars?
Do you want the gift every 6 months, or are you cool with every year now?
I am totally fine with every year. I mean, I think every year is great. If you think about it, there are... it seems weird to make this comparison because it's almost apples and oranges. But that horror franchise Saw and also Paranormal Activity, they came out with movies like every 9 to 12 months. And by the time you got to the third and fourth one, you're just like, enough is enough. Now, Star Wars is a completely different beast, but I have no problem with them pacing themselves. Also, if you think about it, they already have Rogue One. They already have a young Han Solo movie in the planning. Who knows what else they're going to toss at us. We are looking at potentially... 4 to 6 years where we know what we're going to be doing the second or third week of December.
Oh, yeah. No, I like being able to plan. And Tom, you were looking forward to this schedule, but it is nice having a thing to actually look forward to and not just wonder if they're ever going to do it again.
No, exactly. And even The Hobbit, which I know was not nearly as much of a fun anticipation as Lord of the Rings, was fun to have in the holiday season. And so having The Hobbit give way to Star Wars this year was just lovely. Yeah. And so I'm 100% convinced by Jenny that this will be a good thing. I was just so selfishly gleeful after I came out of the first movie, the first time I saw it, the episode 7, and realized like, oh, I'll get another one in less than 2 years. Mm-hmm. And now it's like back to 2 years. So it's just a little selfishness on my part.
Totally understand.
I do have a question for you guys, though. One thing that I was reading on a couple of sites is, and you were talking about like the reasons behind the move is, apparently insiders were saying that they thought that fans were going to be more drawn to the Kylo Ren character when it seems like Rey instead has gotten all the focus and attention in the spotlight. So they're trying to retool the script so that there's more focus on Rey. Do you guys think that that's honestly the case, or is that just...
Well, if they were surprised by how much focus was on Rey or how many people responded to that, then I think that's the only part that seems fishy to me, because she was clearly a focus in the film. It isn't like they accidentally made her the focus.
She was the driving force of the film.
I didn't think Kylo Ren got
enough
time to be focused.
Yeah. I agree, Jenny. Totally driving force.
Yeah.
That
and
sounds
also,
like something somebody made up.
Yeah, that one's a little fishy to me, although I will say that they may wait. I like to think, let's get away from what we think is really true. I like to think that they went 6 miles deep into the Reddit subreddit, you know, the subreddits of theories about Star Wars, and read all the different Star Wars theories that there are. They're like, oh, we got to rip everything up and change it all.
Mm. See, I actually hope that's not the case, because I want them to have known from the beginning what the important things are and not be changing those at the last minute, because that would be bad. If they're like, oh, wow, maybe Kylo Ren will be this person's son instead of this person. Like, I hope not.
You don't
hope,
want it to be a fanfic.
I hope they've known from the beginning of J.J. Abrams, like, where the important parts are. And the stuff that they're changing is like, oh, it'll be easier to get from this important point to this important point, or it'll be more compelling if we do it this way instead of this way.
Yeah, if it's too easy to just flip the script. Because they wiped out all the future fiction that were in the previous books and said, yeah, no more extended fiction. We're starting over. if it's so easy for them to just switch a switch off based on somebody's theory, that scares me, because I don't want it to be that fluid and light. I'd like there to be some backbone to it, even if there isn't any. But I like the idea that there is some predestined awesome storyline to take us all the way through episode 9 and blow our minds and nothing will change. But Jenny, in your mind, this is like little stuff. Like,
oh, it's far more likely that what you're saying is exactly true based on everything I just said about how much I totally trust all those people. But yeah. I do like thinking that they are like, these are the people that helped create Lost, one of them. And you know, they're in there looking at those subreddits.
Oh, but
even
see,
if they're
that's
not paying
what scares
any attention.
People, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, oh, you mean they don't know how it ends?
Yeah. See, here, can I just wrap up with the magical thing about Star Wars?
Only if you promise me that a Jedi named Nikki and Paulo join forces. Only if you tell me that.
Here's the magical
episode
thing.
7.5 will be the Nikki and Paulo.
Before Star Wars came out this past December, none of us would have dared to even joke about stuff like that because the pain was too deep, right? We needed that movie to be good. We needed them to know. And now that we can even just joke about it is like so freeing and awesome. Like the fear is a little bit reduced.
Yep. I totally agree.
We've taken our first steps
into a larger world.
So remember that weird fluctuation around a star that was fun to think could be caused by like a Dyson sphere, but was more likely to be caused by comets? Turns out it's probably neither. The star has been gradually dimming for more than a century. They've gone back and looked at other records to see if there were accidental observations of this star, which happens a lot when you're pointed at one thing, but you get other stuff. And they found out that it would require 648,200 kilometer wide comets to be in existence around that star to fit the data, which is, according to astronomers, very unlikely. Also, an alien structure would have to have been built ridiculously fast to cover a fifth of the star in as much time as they've calculated. So they're like, even if there is an alien structure there, it seems very unlikely that it could physically be built that fast. Like, they'd have to be moving objects near the speed of light and stuff. So now it's just even more odd. Like, we've got this weird fluctuating thing that doesn't fit any pattern of anything we can think of.
I kind of wondered if that's where this was going to end up, because the other two, part of me likes the Dyson sphere theory. I want to see that happen. I want to find a sun in some other system that has figured out a way to build a giant stratosphere over the top of their sun and harnessed its power. I mean, that's an amazing idea. It always has been. But I didn't think that was likely. That seemed crazy to me. But now... it's even now we now see our little human brains are trying to figure this out, and we're all going to come up with a million ideas for why this star is like fading in and out. It could just be it's about ready to pop. I mean, maybe this one's just, you know, some light bulbs go and they just end. Some of them flicker a little bit. Some make a weird buzzing sound for a couple of months. Who's to say this isn't just some weird sun?
I'm sorry. Did you say it was a sun that was gradually losing power and then getting its power back? Could it by any chance be caused by a giant planet that had a star sucking energy thing in the center of it?
Oh my gosh. I hadn't thought of that. What do you think, Ro? What's the likely? Yeah, nicely
I'm
done.
I'm with Jenny.
Yeah.
Not to mention someone who's been pursuing their sun, who's been slowly dimming from the light side.
See, we've just done two things that if you haven't seen the movie, you're not spoiled. You have no idea what we're talking about.
Yeah, you are.
Well, maybe a little. That's pretty good, though.
I think this is actually a trade dispute.
Sweet. Like, I knew you would have.
See,
this is a
century,
this is
there's
a book
been a
idea.
Trade blockade slowly building up, blocking out the sun.
Is this going to be one of the other tales of the aggregate we're going to get at some point?
Yeah.
All right. I know is I'm pretty sure the OPA is involved.
Okay, good. Oh my gosh.
Definitely Belters.
Are you watching that too?
Definitely Belters.
Mm-hmm. The Expanse is awesome.
Oh my gosh, I'm so into it. There's even things going on I'm not sure I understand, and I love it for it. Like it's willing to paint a tapestry of world building that doesn't require that I understand every detail, only that I know I'm in a world that's complicated, and I freaking love that.
Can I just be that guy for a moment?
Be that guy.
And say for the first time, and I think maybe for the first time in my life, I was in on the ground floor of something. Like Game of Thrones, I got in at the third book. Hitchhiker's Guide, I got into the second book. Leviathan Wakes, I read less than a year after it. Well, actually, no, I think I read it pretty close to like a month after it came out. And loved it. And kept going back for more and telling other people about it. And then I was excited it became a TV series. So I'm so stoked that this thing that is only I loved at first, because nobody else I knew had read it, is now just becoming universally loved.
I remember seeing those books in the bookstore and having this feeling of, well, that looks like a generic sci-fi book by a guy I've never heard of. And now I kick myself in the butt. Because what a dumb thing to think about a thing you see at a bookstore. I wish I would have listened to you. I'd heard you talk about it months and months ago before I even knew there was a show in the works. My gosh, it's fun. And I've got the first book now. I'm going to be reading that as soon as I finish this other thing I got. It's great. If you're not watching The Expanse on Sci-Fi, then they're not advertising on the show. Although if they want to, give us a call. But that show is great, and it's totally worth your time. And I please let them renew that and not, you know.
They already did.
Okay. Whew.
First season two, anyway.
All right. I'm good then.
Apple has required a Ms. Donna Bush of Victoria, Canada, to get a court order in order to get the Apple password for her husband's iPad after he died.
What?
Not the login code, not the lock screen code. Ms. Bush provided Apple with a will and a death certificate, but was told that was not enough for them to give her his Apple ID password. However, she contacted the CBC, and after the CBC contacted Apple, the company apologized and is offering to resolve the issue without a court order. Still waiting to see if that actually gets resolved.
All right. So, wow. I don't even know where to start with this. I actually really appreciate the idea that one of the big monolithic companies that we buy products from might be hesitant to toss people's login information around, even in these circumstances, which seem like the most mitigating, right? I guess that makes me happy on one side, but I really feel bad for her that she can't get into this thing. So I don't know what to think. I think I'd rather they be sticklers about it and then do what you're saying here at the end, which is they'll try to resolve it and get there. There's ways to get there. There's ways to prove all this.
A will and a death certificate.
Couldn't you fake those?
Seems like a sufficient burden of proof.
It does.
I'll tell you what.
It's enough proof to get most other forms of property.
That's true. Yeah. That's true.
But I'll tell you what it does lead to the ultimate need for, which is a digital will, right? So maybe we need, because both of you are right. Right. Like, this is one of those stories where neither of you are wrong. But maybe what you need is an explicit, like, you know, they have all those legal Zoom forms. Let's have a legal Zoom form for I explicitly state that so and so person can have my passwords upon my death if I haven't already given them. This is my digital, you know, inheritor.
Yeah. You can do that on Google. You can say, if I don't log in within a certain period of time, you can set it 6 months, a year, whatever. I authorize this person to access my accounts. It's like a dead man's switch for your Google account.
Yeah. All right, but
I think that's a genius idea.
But doesn't
Jenny. Like make a templated legal document that you can show to people and go, no, look, I have permission.
Doesn't the sheer complexity of the internet and how many logins you might have and all of those things just make this? I mean, I'm saying this not knowing, but it seems like it would make it harder. Like Ro, if you had a will that said, your considerable amount of time and what you have collected in World of Warcraft, which is very considerable.
Way too many days.
Yes, very many. You don't want to do a slash played. Your computer will pop and explode in a puff of smoke. Let's say you bequeathed that to me in some sort of digital will. It seems like that is a very different template than the one that says access to my emails and access to my Facebook messages or whatever else. Like that, I guess what I'm saying is it seems hard, Jenny, to have something that's standardized enough to cover all possible weird cases.
Well, it sounds like if Ro is as good of a Warcraft player as he is, that's an actual monetary bequeathment and therefore would be in a will, right? Mm-hmm. I'll be your fake lawyer, Scott. Okay. Like, I'll take care of this.
All right.
I bequeathed my 950,000 gold to Scott Johnson. It's weird, though. I mean, there's so many different forms of digital property, and there's more and more forms of digital property whether it's, you know, journal entries or, you know, passwords or what other information you're keeping. And it's kind of Apple's being very black and white about this issue. But the fact of the matter is that while, yes, they need to have a company policy and they need to stick to the letter of the policy as much as possible, it's just going to be natural that there are going to be a million shades of gray and there are going to be certain weird circumstances that come up from all of this. And I don't think it's going to affect our generation or the next generation as much, because we're going to be prepared for it, I believe. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of us are going to be prepared for including things like that in the language of our wills, so on and so forth. But with the current generation of elders, I can see it being a definite issue.
Because they're not thinking about it.
Right.
Yeah. No, that makes sense to me. Oh, by the way, if there's ever a movie called A Million Shades of Grey, I'm not going to see it. That's number one. And number two, I have to ask, do you really have nearly a billion in gold in the game? Is that true?
I have near gold cap, which is 950,000 on a single character. But there are other players who have like the gold cap on multiple characters.
Oh my gosh. I'm lucky if I have 100,000. Anyway, sorry. Had to just get that out there.
It's all right.
Tom, continue.
Yeah, I think what's going on is Apple is dealing with the issue of the sensitivity around security, like phishing schemes, where they're mm-hmm. like, no, I'm the wife of the guy and he's dead, so give me access. And they want to make it hard to do that, and exceptionally hard. And that's what Scott started this conversation with, is like, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
And the fact that giving over your information to without a court order has become a sensitive issue, right? If the government comes knocking, is like, hey, we want to look at Scott Johnson's emails there, Apple's going to be like, come back with a court order. Otherwise, we're not giving them to you. Yeah. So I get that's the root of the problem. Apple finally is having the sense to say, okay, well, this isn't really what that policy is meant to address, so let's figure this out. At the same time, I think in the CBC article, they talk about it would be helpful if there was a law on the books that said, if you're the executor of an estate, mm-hmm. you automatically own the digital properties of that estate.
In the same way you'd own the physical properties.
Right.
Of
that estate. And so when this person said, no, here's the will, here's the death certificate, Apple could say, oh, okay, well, it's very clear legally that you own this. Because here's the thing, the will may not say anything specifically about digital property, and Apple and this woman could have been a relative who's trying to sneak in and get access to things mm-hmm. that she shouldn't have. So again, if you make the law clear, or like Jenny's idea, if you make your will clear, like, no, this person does have my digital assets now, I think that would go a long way to resolving this. This poor lady just wanted to play one of her online games and do some in-game purchases.
She just wanted how this whole thing candy. Started.
Yeah, she wants to catch crushed candy and jelly or whatever. I understand that, and you're totally right. I would just add before we move on this one tiny thing, and that is, if this was a story about Apple blocking somebody from getting someone's personal info and it was nefarious, we would all be celebrating that policy and wishing all other companies followed the same policies.
But she just wanted to play Crossy Road.
But because of that, because she just really wanted that gorilla character in Crossy Road.
It wasn't even in-game purchases. She just wanted to upgrade the app.
Oh, was that all?
And then it said, oh, well, you need your password. You know, put in your Apple password to access the store, and it wouldn't let her do it.
I'm surprised they don't have more of this happen. My mom calls me every other day with a password problem, so on her iPad. So I'm just surprised that's not a thing we hear in the news more. But look, they did the right thing in the end. Did it take a little news pressure to do it from a, you know, CBC? Yes. But in the end, she's probably, you know, buying Smurf berries by the dozen. It's fine now.
Alan Wurzel is the head of research and media development for NBC Universal. He was talking to TV critics at the TCA event about some research that the network commissioned, including finding out what amount of people watch Netflix shows like Jessica Jones and Master of None. In fact, he told them Jessica Jones and Master of None get an estimated 4 to 5 million viewers in the 18 to 49 demographic. That's about equivalent to what Modern Family or How to Get Away with Murder gets. Netflix's Ted Sarandos, in response, said, I hope they didn't spend any money on that study. The methodology doesn't reflect any sense of reality we keep track of.
I'm rubber. You're glue. Whatever your words say, bounce off me and stick to you. This is just like, you know, round 7 in broadcast v. Netflix.
Yeah, but I don't understand why broadcast thought they would have. I don't know how they think they have the data. that they think they have. Like,
they did a survey, right? And the survey involved sound recognition.
Yeah.
So they put devices in people's homes that would listen to what was on TV and go, okay, they watched this and this and this, and the database was able to identify the Netflix thing. So it's the same as Nielsen ratings in principle. You're taking a sample of people and then extrapolating because it's a representative sample and saying, okay, we think an estimated this number of people watched those shows.
Okay. But if I was really good at impersonating Doc Brown and yelled, Marty, it's your kids.
Wouldn't work.
They would just think I'm watching that movie over and over.
Have you tried singing into Songza and making it it never works.
Doesn't work, does it? No.
This is just all about advertisers and how much the broadcast networks are freaking out every time someone mentions the word Netflix. The advertisers are like, for all we know, they're getting billions of, and this is the broadcast networks attempt to say, no, you know how you spent this much money to put your ad on How to Get Away with Murder? This is how much Jessica Jones is getting. So it's like all about trying not to freak out.
And Netflix, on the other hand, doesn't want to count these numbers,
right?
Because they don't care. What they care about is whether people keep paying for subscriptions. And if the producers of television shows have these numbers, it could help them in negotiations. Because if Netflix is like, okay, we'll pay you $7 million for this, and you can say, well, hold on, you're going to get 4 or 5 million viewers of this thing. I demand $8 million. Then Netflix is like, oh, crap, right? They don't want that to be part of the conversation.
Wow, that's really interesting.
Now, with Hulu, which is another popular service, I actually end up using Hulu than I do more than Netflix, usually for watching stuff. Hulu is actually owned by a majority of those big networks, right?
Three of the four majors, yeah.
It was like a joint deal.
So that's why it's not as much of a big deal for them, because they can just basically, they have access to those numbers. So is it more about the networks versus Netflix, or is it more a Hulu versus Netflix kind of thing?
It's a little of both, but it's really, in this case, it's more networks, because the NBC Universal head of media development doesn't care about Hulu much.
Okay.
Right now.
But he might have a show that did really okay. So here's, let me ask you this. If I've got Netflix is public, right? They're a public company?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yes.
All right. So they have to, I don't know what numbers they have to give out, but if a show that NBC Universal produces normally on NBC, they make a show and it does well during its initial run, and then they put it up on Hulu and Netflix, they know immediately on Hulu what kind of response they're getting. And on Netflix, do they know as much?
Like, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. Okay.
Basically, they Netflix pays them a certain amount to have access to the show and put it on demand.
But you can see why this is where my brain keeps going. You can see why the old model, wondering how many people are doing a thing, matters.
It matters if you're selling ads.
Yeah, yeah.
And it matters if you're charging someone to say, well, you're going to get 5 million people watch this, so I want to charge you this much because I think it's worth that much to you. And you can also see why Netflix, like, I don't care how many people watch it. I've got an infinite number of shows in here. All I care is that enough people found some shows they like to pay me another $7.99 or $8.99 mm-hmm. next month. It's the collision of two different ways of monetizing your audience.
Yeah.
So as far as another thing in determining, like, possible motives for like why NBC would want that information in the first place. Do they want to acquire that information from Netflix as far as a number of people watching certain shows so they know what kind of similar programming to put on their networks in the future?
A lot of it has to do with, and Jenny, I'm curious to hear what you say mm-hmm. here, but a lot of it has to do with NBC's undermining the idea that Netflix is stealing their audience. So Wurzel went on to say a lot of things about how, and thus we are not frightened of Netflix because these numbers show that our audiences are strong. And though people watch Netflix, it doesn't take away from watching our shows.
What's terrifying to the networks who do these big upfronts every year in like, you know, early May, where they get all the advertisers locked in a room and lock down rates for shows they haven't even seen yet, and say this show's gonna be huge, is that there's now this perception that content creators can go to Netflix and just launch a House of Cards or launch a Daredevil and a Jessica Jones. And if Marvel is consistently going to go for their darker, edgier stuff that people want to see over to the subscription place where la, 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 we don't care about ads, that is having a huge, if not financial just yet, mental and future-based impact on all across all the networks. And only ABC Disney is per se immune to it in some way with the Marvel thing, you know, just on that particular example. And Fox, obviously, with 20th Century Fox has some of those properties. But yeah, you're looking at like every network executive is looking at a bleak future if they don't figure out how to shorten and streamline that development cycle for these TV shows.
Well, and that's a really good point because NBC made Master of None and Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt.
And
so the studios at all of these networks are like, can sell a show to Netflix. That's great. But it's the folks who run the actual network who are like, but we want people to spend 5 million viewers worth of money with us. And if they're like, I don't think you can get 5 million viewers anymore because they're all watching Netflix, that makes it a harder sell.
Plus, it's such a weird juxtaposition. It's like, well, we don't think Kimmy Schmidt's going to do well. Well, then let's sell it off to Netflix because that's now an option we have, and that we can recoup our development costs. Great, sell it to Netflix. Then it becomes a huge hit there on the level of whatever hits are on Netflix, and has a big sort of reaction from critics. People really liked it. It gets renewed for a second season. By all accounts, a successful venture for Netflix in keeping people paying monthly, right? Or it's one of the things that is good and people think of when they think of why do I pay a monthly fee to Netflix. But it's a double-edged sword for the network because they're like, well, we recouped our costs, but damn it, now they have a show we could have maybe made work over here.
Or, now you know why my family drinks.
Well, but it's also, that's not new. CBS produces American Idol.
Yeah. It's a good point.
It's American Idol is produced out of CBS Studios, and that's because CBS said, we'll produce that, but we don't want to put it on our air. It's not right for us. And it was a huge hit.
Yeah.
But for every one of those, there's another one that Fox produced for NBC. Like, that happens. It happens a lot. So doing it for Netflix shouldn't be different, but I think where you're right is they're like, oh, but it's Netflix. It's not one of us.
It's one of them. It feels like you've given it to this dirty third party and that doesn't play by your rules. And I as much as I think that old way of thinking needs to change and they got to get smart about it and get out in front of it, I kind of understand how they feel.
Speaking of dirty, dirty Netflix, they're trying to steal Matt Groening.
What?
Deadline reports that Matt Groening is in talks to create and write an animated series for Netflix.
Oh my Lord.
Do they know no bounds?
Oh my gosh. That is amazing news. I completely missed this in the lineup and generally. I didn't know about this. That is very exciting to me.
What would it be?
I don't know. I mean, I already, you know.
Future Simpsons.
I watch Simpsorama. No, I watch Futurama usually with my kids, probably, I don't know, 10 times a week. Like, still one of my favorite shows of all time. If he could swoop in there and do something amazing, I don't know what it would be.
I mean, I would adore more Futurama, but I'm almost more excited about the idea of the mind of Matt Groening birthing something new.
Yeah.
Well, and un-network restricted.
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be all right. Okay, I'm going to make a guess. Everyone make a guess, a quick guess of what you think it is. Here's mine. It's going to be about office life in a dot-com startup type scenario, and it'll be set in the early 2000s. There's my idea. It's a bad one, but let's keep going.
The Office meets The Simpsons.
Basically, yes.
All right.
Rogue, you go next.
We're doing that with Muppets, and that's not working so well in ABC.
No,
what do you got?
I feel like it's something that would take place in, say, the 50s or 60s, where all of our concept of like modern culture and how everything is very politically correct and stuff like that, just kind of a mock reflection of how the 50s and 60s were and how everything was very far more inappropriate in some ways than they are now.
That's actually not bad.
So it's Mad Men meets Family Guy.
Kind of.
That's not bad. Actually, yeah. Jenny,
current.
Yeah, outdo us all, Jenny. What do you got?
I think he would go back this time to the past, to the deep past, not just the 50s, but like all the way back to, say, 1436, and just make a tremendous parallel between things that are going on in the world then and things that are going on in the world now, and have lots of naked animated people, because it's Netflix.
So it's Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Yes.
Game of Thrones.
Okay.
But animated.
But you can do this now because, see, it's not like John Kay when he brought Ren and Stimpy to Spike. everybody was really upset with him because the show that was on Nickelodeon, while edgy and cutting edge and all the things that that show was in the early 90s, was still a show you could, you know, a 5-10-year-old kid could watch it. He went over to Spike and made this really adult, very, very adult version of Ren and Stimpy. And for a lot of people, even if they're cool with that normally, were completely like, it ruined the characters for them. There's like, you just can't change it like this. It's like taking Bambi and making a porn out of it and having Disney do it. So what you're saying is actually workable, though. It's Matt Groening, original property. And no one's suggested Life in Hell, by the way, being adapted finally as an animation. That's possible.
So I have a question for you guys, though. And I'm not much of a binge watcher. I mean, I watch Netflix stuff, but even with stuff that's on Hulu and Netflix, I rarely am one of those people who takes in a whole bunch of episodes at once. Because one thing I find is when I pace myself in watching content, even like with The Expanse, when I was just getting on board with The Expanse, I didn't watch the first 4 episodes all at once. I actually gave myself a few days between each one. The reason behind that is because I find that the characters, I care more about the characters for a longer period of time when I'm taking them in bite-sized pieces. Now, when Matt Groening comes out with this new series, will the world that he creates and the characters that he create be engraved on people's minds in the way that, say, The Simpsons were, or the characters from Futurama were? Because if it's on Netflix, you're going to get all 12 or 20 episodes all in one chunk. Well, what do you guys think about
that? That's an interesting point. We're not used to that binge. Well, we're used to binge watching old things from Futurama or Simpsons. But Tom, we've never had like, well, I guess we have original animated series, but
I mean, you know, I don't know that animated changes the question all that much. And I would argue that House of Cards does suffer a little bit from the fact that you watch them all in a few weeks period rather than, you know, taking time to get to know the characters. I don't think it's been fatal to it, obviously. It's still doing very well. But yeah, I think that does have an effect on those kind of hard to get to used to characters.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I love him, so he can't go. He can't do anything I won't make sure and check out, even if it's bad.
And the last two stories here are things that Ro wanted us to talk about. Good stuff here, Ro. Pointed out the Marvel news that Steve Rogers will be rejuvenated as Captain America after the upcoming standoff event in a new series of the comic books, not talking about the movies, called Captain America Steve Rogers. If you don't know, this is a minor spoiler. In the comics, the Falcon, Sam Wilson, took over as Captain America after the Iron Nail removed the super soldier serum from Rogers, causing him to age. So he's kind of an old man advisor in the comics right now.
Yeah, he has been for a while. And one of the things revolving around this is that there was a period of time where Marvel was on this big push to really promote diversity as far as their flagship characters go. So right now you have an Asian character who's the Hulk. Thor is a female, a female character right now. And Ms. Marvel, also they had different ethnicity for her. So they're really trying to diversify all these main characters that they have. And a lot of people looked upon that as a pretty positive thing, especially Captain America too. I didn't hear, I mean, of course there's internet trolls and stuff about it, but some people being like, oh, that's not how it should be. I thought it was a positive move. Some people are wondering now, have they decided that it wasn't a great move? Now they're going to keep both characters as Captain America. So their explanation is going to be there's enough threats in the world for there to be two Captain Americas.
Captain's America.
Yes,
Captain's
America. Two Captain's America. Mm-hmm. And Rogers is going to take on the more traditional Hydra-type villains, while Sam Wilson's going to be going off against most of the stuff that he has been taking on in the past. But what do you guys feel about Marvel's backtracking? I mean, backtracking on characters dying in comics isn't a big thing before, and I don't know if everyone thought if Captain America going to Sam Wilson that was going to be a permanent thing, but why do you feel they decided to make this switch and bring him back in? Do you think it's all motivated by the movie or something else?
Well, it's never permanent in comics. Like, anytime a stunt like this is pulled, Superman is dead, I just go, Sure he is. Like, there's no such thing. So once you realize that and accept that for what it is, then you can just sink yourself into this stuff and enjoy it on the level of let's take some chances. Let's do things we don't normally do in comics, and let's go places we don't normally go, knowing we're going to come back to what's familiar and what we're used to, and it's fine. So this doesn't surprise me at all. I'd be more surprised if it was permanent. That is for sure.
Well, and I hear you there, drawing kind of a parallel, though, to the Thor comic book. There's a part of me that really, really hopes that they just keep Thor as the... For people who haven't read the comic, I'm not going to say who Thor actually is. But I hope that they keep Thor as a female Thor character permanently. That's what I hope for. Do I think it's going to happen? No, I think eventually it's going to revert back too. But it'd be kind of nice to see a change like this be a permanent thing. And I think I really take it kind of close to heart because I'm one of those weird Green Lantern fans who was a fan of Kyle Rayner, who replaced Hal Jordan for like 10 years. Mm. And once you got to like 8 or 9 years, it seemed like, wow, Kyle Rayner's going to be Green Lantern for the rest of his days. Nope.
They always go back to Hal Jordan. That's what I'm saying is it's a permanent thing. They're never going to do it. It'll always come back, even if it means 20 years from now, a new artist writer team says, all right, you guys are in charge of the flagging comic Iron Man because no one cares about movies anymore and Iron Man's kind of dropped to B level again. See what you guys can do with it. And they're going to go back to like hardcore Tony Stark. It'll be before his grandson took over the suit. It'll be like Rob Jarvis.
Back to the alcoholism.
Yeah, it'll be all the stuff that it'll bring it back to these classic moments, and then suddenly you start the cycle again. I just think that is comic books 101, and there is no getting away from it.
Yeah, these are people that smash whole universes and then bring them back together. So
they'll
do anything.
Yeah, I mean, if I didn't know any better, I would say it was like they looked at the financials and said, oh, we can actually sell more Captain America comic books if we bring back Steve Rogers and keep Sam Wilson.
Hmm.
Oh, see? All right, Tom, you're working.
Let's finish off with some astronomy. Again, astronomers Mike Brown and Konstantin Batygin have published findings that a ninth planet, Planet X, may be in a 10 to 20,000 year orbit. Not misspeaking there. That's what they estimate. Out beyond Pluto in the Kuiper Belt. The paper describes how a giant planet could account for the weird cluster of orbits of six objects from the Kuiper Belt that kind of tilt to one side of the sun. Brown discovered the dwarf planet Eris, and that led to the reclassification of Pluto as a dwarf planet, and he owns it. Brown's Twitter handle is Pluto Killer.
Oh, geez. That's a little harsh.
What does he have against Pluto? Come on.
Well, I mean, Pluto is much controversy, right, over the years. Like, once it's a planet, then it's a planetoid, then it was a...
Have you met Pluto? It's icy.
Is it? Yeah, it's a little icy and a little standoffish. Although those photos made it look a little warm and welcoming compared to what we had seen. When I was a kid, Pluto to me was literally like a big blue ice ball in my head. That's all it ever was. It was it was round, blue, like blue, dark, cold ice. And those photos that came out last year were like, whoa,
hey,
hold on a minute. That looks like, that could be Mad Max or something. Like, this looks like a desert and, you know.
That looks like a desert ice ball.
So
what kind of gets me about this is that Planet Nine actually hasn't been seen yet, right? Here we have telescopes and we have astronomers looking to other stars. I mean, we were just talking about this sun earlier in the show, and we haven't found this ninth planet. It's weird how science works like that.
Well, what's the someone had the phrase a couple of weeks ago. Someone said, who was it? Somebody on Twitter, someone famous. Anyway, they said, it's nice when people realize that science isn't a belief system. It is how'd they put it? It was really good. Now I can't think of it.
Oh, I know exactly what you're talking about. It's like,
it's not a belief. It's not a system of beliefs. It is a system of not discovery. It was something.
It's like a way of understanding the universe. Yeah. It's like something so good.
It was educational language, but it was really, really good and smart to be reminded once in a while that science is often purposely. Well, not
but
purposely.
A process and methodology for seeking an objective reality.
Thank you. There you go. That's it. And the whole idea being that it's sometimes it's a crapshoot. Sometimes you think it might be a Dyson sphere, but really it was comets. Well, maybe it's not comets. Maybe it's another thing. Like all these.
Maybe it's aliens.
Yeah, maybe it's anything. So what do you do? All right, what are the steps to try to find out? Test this as far as we can go. Test that. Okay, we've tested that. We've gone a little farther. Okay, we've learned some things. Now go to the next step. Like there's something beautiful about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let it be.
And there's also something beautiful about the people who contribute on our subreddit. Keep it up. And it really is what makes it possible for us to figure out what to talk about on this show. Star Fury Zeta, Tipo DeCinta, Piscator NF, Captain Kipper, as always, and EFC 88 all contributed stories to this show. Thank you very much.
Regular names with regular submissions, and you guys are great. Also, one other thing that helps the show go is this brand new thing we're doing. We're getting to the point where we can't call it brand new anymore because we got stuff shipping. It's the Crate Joy from Current Geek. It's at frogpants.cratejoy.com. It is a nerdy box full of all kinds of goodies from me, from Tom, and from guests, and from all over the place. People who are already subscribed should be getting or already have their boxes now for their first
one. We're making deals for this box.
Oh my gosh, yes. Swinging all kinds of deals. Yeah. Some more cool stuff coming soon for that subscription. It's real easy to do. Just go to frogpants.cratejoy.com. I really enjoyed doing the six-month calendar that Tom wrote for the year 2044, was it?
Yeah, Jenny helped write that too. Don't forget.
Oh, I didn't know that, Jenny. That's awesome. I did. Oh, that's great. I should have noticed your touch there. I know what love is, Jenny.
I still have to write my ode to all the Chris's for one of the upcoming nerd boxes.
It's pretty awesome. But anyway, it was fun to illustrate that and put that in there. We'll have the latter part of the year shipping in another box as a separate calendar. We're doing those as 6 month increments. We've got prints and stickers and doodads and upcoming things that are way too exciting to even mention here. So go check it out. Sign up for it. It helps the show happen, literally. Frogpants.cratejoy.com. Do it today. It's time for this.
America scores and wins.
All right. There's no avoiding it. We're finally here. So Jenny was kind of a last minute ad. So today's quiz for her is a little bit last minute. But since it's something I also really like, I'm going to do you last, Jenny.
Okay.
And we're going to jump over to Ro. And Ro, I just have to pull yours up. Hold on 1 second. This is where we ask you guys a series of questions and a quiz about something in your expertise. If you get it right, if you get it wrong, the entire time Tom does stuff with it where he...
I score it.
It gives you a score.
It's just called scoring.
Yeah, it's just scoring. I don't know why I was trying to come up with a word that isn't scoring. But hey, it's Friday and it's late. Here you go. Here's your questions. This is all in the area of the Flash television show.
I love The Flash.
You do like The Flash, don't you?
I like that show too.
It's pretty good. I've not seen all of it, but look forward to. Here is your first question. How many episodes were there in season one of The Flash?
23.
You are, hold on, correct, nicely done.
Get 23 points.
All right.
Who designed the costume for Flash in the television series?
Cisco.
You are incorrect, it is Colleen Atwood.
Oh, I thought you were talking about like which character designed it.
Ambiguity. And when you said that, I knew that's what you meant, so I leave it to Tom and his capable
Does
hands.
Does Colleen Atwood play Cisco?
No.
No.
She's like a costume designer lady.
Yeah, you're going to lose a point for making excuses. So.
Okay.
All right, what city does most of the filming for The Flash take place in?
Vancouver?
You are correct. You could have said that with almost every show, but yes.
Yeah, right.
Number next, who plays Barry Allen / The Flash in the show?
I'm Barry Allen.
Grant Gustin.
You are correct.
Fastest man alive.
You're going to ace this thing, man. Is the name of the final episode in the first season on Flash?
Fast Enough.
Oh, man. You're just killing it.
Nice. 2 point bonus there.
Yeah, that was speedy. Speed bonus. Tom's big good about giving those out. Who directed the premiere episode of season two entitled The Man Who Saved Central City?
Ooh. I'm taking a guess on this. Jeff Johns?
It was Ralph Hemaker. Mm. You know, the guy we all know, Ralph Hemaker.
Ralph Atlee Hemaker.
Next up, Candace Patton plays what character in what show?
Iris West in The Flash.
I guess he means in The Flash. That's weird. Oh, I guess he meant in the show. He put in what show? Weird.
Yeah. In what show?
Yeah, in what show again? What are we talking about? All right. In what final question? In what season of Arrow does Barry Allen make his first appearance?
That is easy. It is episode 8 in season 2, and bonus points, Flash Arrow crossovers happen in the 8th episode of each season of The Flash.
Whoa, look at you. You were right on all counts.
All right, so you get 1 point for getting it right.
Yeah.
You get 3 points bonus for the extra material, but then you lose a point bragging penalty for saying it was easy.
or saying it was worth bonus points. All right.
He was right about that.
Yeah.
Definitely
turns out you were right. All right, well done. That means Jenny's turn, and then we compare your scores. Jenny, it's not like he did really well or anything. You're going to be fine.
I know. I'm really nervous. This finally have a worthy competitor.
You're going to be totally fine. So here are your questions. It deals with a common love that you and I both have for the West Wing.
Oh!
West Wing trivia. All right? Are you ready for this?
Yes.
What year? We may have done these before. Not these, but West Wing stuff before. I'm having deja vu about this.
No, I definitely didn't get... It wasn't to me.
Okay, wasn't to you. May have been... I don't know.
We did Dark Tower.
All right, so here you go. What year did West Wing premiere?
99.
You are correct.
Speed bonus.
Mandy Hampton is the ex-girlfriend of what character?
Josh Lyman.
You are correct.
Speed bonus.
Killing it. What is Sam Seaborn's job, at least initially?
Deputy Communications Director.
Nailed it.
Speed bonus.
Man. All right. I don't know, Brian. You're in trouble here. Next one.
She's doing good.
CJ Craig is the press secretary who then succeeds who to become chief of staff?
The dearly beloved Leo McGarry.
There's a photo of you and the actor.
Beloved bonus.
Yeah, beloved bonus. Oh, still hard for me, that episode. Mm-hmm. Still hard. It's also the Mrs. What's-her-name. Anyway.
Yeah, Lanningham,
yeah. Next up, what network did West Wing originally air on?
NBC.
All right.
Singing bonus.
Oh, my gosh. I didn't know there was one. What year did the West Wing series end?
Oh.
With the election of... Well, I won't say it in case there's another question about it.
Bill Clinton.
Yeah, I don't want to say it.
I mean, I guess it was... I mean, I know who it was. They elected President Matt Santos.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it ended in 2000 and... Fudge.
2000 and fudge.
2000, I'm just going to say 2002.
2002? You are incorrect. It was 2006.
Oh, I knew it was later. Oh,
there's
more.
I was
going to say 2004.
Yeah.
2006 is well known as the year of fudge.
Mm.
So you get a partial credit for that.
You also
had 2006 in my mind, and I like double overthought it.
You get extra credit for naming today's episode 2000 and fudge. how many episodes of The West Wing are there in total? That's a mean question. Who would know?
That's
this?
A hard one. Yeah.
Hold on. Can I do out loud math?
Yeah, I'll tell you. I'll give you a hint. It's more than Firefly, less than Seinfeld.
Right. Okay, so if it was 99 to 2006, that means it was roughly speaking, seven? I can't do math. 99, 2002, 01, 02, 03, 04, 05, 06, 07, 08. So, eight. And then it was 22 episodes times eight. That is a math I can't do. So I don't know.
176 is the calculator
response. So I'm going to actually say that it was 175 episodes.
You are incorrect. It was 156.
Yeah, because there were probably less than 22.
And there were probably some writer strikey things, and there's always something like that.
All right. So you only get 9/10 of a point.
All right. Okay. I like it. A math bonus for a math answer.
Totally.
Final question. Who does Jimmy Smith play on the show? Dang it.
President-elect.
Dale Organa.
Matthew Santos.
Well done.
Like we never heard of you.
Oh, I loved him in that.
I love him.
You know who else is great? I thought
everyone.
Alan Alda. Everybody was good.
Yeah. She gets a 10-point I messed with her answer bonus.
Oh, nice. Wow. All right. Well, this could get ugly. So, Tom, there's your answers. There's their scores. How'd they do?
It is a virtual tie. Ro with 30, Jenny with 30.4.
Oh my goodness. Jeez Louise. That
Every
is a
tenth counts.
That's a close shave, everybody. Well done, both of you. That was great.
Good
some
shave.
Some of the best we've had.
The future promises even more startling things to come.
Join us now for a trip down Forecast Lane. Forecast spelled F-O-U-R. It's where we predict the future, the four of us.
Yeah. Once was a Squarespace site.
That's there sure it's was. I know. People don't like it when I say there once was a show. It makes them feel bad.
Yeah.
But hey, whatever. We kept it alive in this form, and time for us to do some predicting. I don't know whose this one is. Who graced us with this one?
This is from next week's guest.
Oh, is it really? That's not good. I didn't think to double. I saw the one next to it. Oh,
how about I delete that and say we will become more intelligent than artificial intelligence before artificial intelligence becomes intelligent enough to overthrow us.
Oh,
I like that. Okay, and I know a little bit about it because I worked on that other show.
Okay, now wait. Are you?
We talked about intelligence amplification on Daily Tech News Show today. All right. And the idea is using computers not to think for themselves, but to help you think better.
Oh, all right. So
the prediction is we just use computers to make us smarter and smarter, and AI can't ever catch us.
So that just buffers us out, so we're always just ahead of it, is the idea.
Yeah.
Okay. Kind of like how it's like Moore's Law for processors in a way. It's always one step ahead, basically.
One step ahead.
Well, man is always one step ahead. All right. So, Jenny, you have things to say about this?
Sure. I think that I would like to be Carrie Ann Moss in The Matrix, and this seems like the best way possible to do it. I don't know if it'll ever be quite that neat as uploading programs into my brain, but really the speed at which when I'm in a pinch and I need a piece of information fast that I can get it from my phone really already is amplified intelligence. Like, I still have old 1998 Jenny fears about writing things down and clipping articles and putting them into place. And then I'm like, stop it. Stop it. Because it's all on the internet.
I would pay good money to watch you fly through a tiny window after a lot of hardcore parkour outside and then come rolling to a stop as you flip up with two guns in your hand to stop whatever agent is
and
coming
say,
through the window.
Dodge this.
Oh, that was so good. Yeah, she's great. Ro, you and I are gamers. We like video games. They're fun, right? We have a good time.
Yes, absolutely.
The great holy grail of video games is AI that will be so good the player won't know they're playing versus a non-human.
AI that would be so good that PvE is just as exciting as PvP.
Exactly. But it hasn't happened yet. Nobody's quite done it. We've had moments of brilliance where you're like, whoa, these bots in Unreal fooled me for a second, or I thought I was having a heroes match with real people for just a second, but it's really just an AI match. So occasionally we get impressed, but how far off do you think it is? Or do you agree with these guys that it'll never happen?
Well, I guess I'm a little skeptical about it, about us being smarter than AI, because if you think about while we're using technology to make ourselves smarter, and I don't argue that at all, what's the one thing that computers have that a lot of humans don't have? The ability to multitask a whole bunch of different things at the same time. I think that's what gives artificial intelligence the possible edge over humans in the future, in that they can think about 200, 300 things simultaneously, while most of us can only think about, what am I eating for dinner tonight?
Yeah.
But once you have a Watson-like computer, which, by the way, is an amplified intelligence, not an AI, in your head while you're eating dinner, you can also think of 300 to 400 things at the same time, thus staying ahead of the AI.
But then don't we become the AI?
If we get the technology to allow us to multitask, if we use technology to multitask on that level, then I totally agree with Tom. Yeah, yeah.
We already are the AI. Well, Jenny
asked a really good question. Yeah, we are.
What is the distinction without a difference between having a cute little robot like the one Len Peralta drew, who is an AI and follows you all around, versus one that is interfacing with your own mind?
An artificial intelligence doesn't need a human. An amplified intelligence depends upon a human. It cannot exist on its own.
Okay.
On a tangent, have any of you played Soma?
No, not yet, but I want to.
You need to play Soma.
Yeah, I hear it's great.
Because this conversation, you'll remember this conversation a bit if you play Soma.
I hear it sticks with you too. That's an intense story in that thing. All right, so you could argue then, Tom, if that's true, you could argue that we already have a lot of examples of amplified intelligence. For example, there are computers that can crunch Wall Street investments at a rate that humans could never fathom, let alone attempt. That is just, that is not a standalone, hey, I'm an autonomous creature living my life and I just happen to be really good at this. That is a thing designed to amplify our ability to handle market conditions.
Yeah, and the example we used on DTNS was helping a doctor with diagnosis, because a machine can look at all the research that is being done in the world and find the relevant information for that diagnosis, whereas the doctor can't physically read everything that exists.
Right. So a notepad back in the day for me when I needed to write down something I wouldn't forget was an amplified intelligence device
for sure.
that has just now...
An abacus is an amplified intelligence.
Yeah, it's now true. It's just moved to devices, computers in the cloud. It's no different, really. Yeah, it's just better, more efficient. So we've stayed a few steps ahead of Skynet or whatever we think it's going to end up being. I completely agree with this. I'm on board, man. I can't believe I'm saying that because my science fiction side really wants to see some trouble. But I like this. This makes sense to me.
Well, there'll still be a war.
Yeah. It'll just be very internal.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it'll be the little AI bot you were talking about earlier, Jenny, like trying to beat us down.
Sell it out on League of Legends.
Yeah, why not? Everybody thinks that AI means a thing that will talk to you and have a conversation and pass the Turing test and all these things. I'm not so sure that's ever what AI will be. I mean, artificial intelligence isn't the definition that it becomes an artificial intelligence truly when it starts to improve itself? Like, has nothing to do with us?
I think that's part of it. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of arguments, and we could talk forever about what the definition actually is. The Turing test is, can it appear to be intelligent so that we can't tell the difference? And part of that is just being able to think for itself. But yeah, there's machine-dependent learning and machine-independent learning. I'm saying that wrong. But the dependent learning requires us to tell it things, like Watson. Like, here are all the articles. Go read them.
Yeah.
Independent is the AI goes, I want to be a doctor. I'm going to go read all these articles now.
Right. And I mean, we all want it to be some scary post-apocalyptic change or shift.
It's supervised and unsupervised learning.
Oh, that's what it is.
So supervised learning is what the amplified intelligence machines do.
I thought it was a hot chick that tries to escape from a prison of a human's making.
I thought it was the voice in your computer that decides to just run off with a bunch of other AIs.
Yeah.
You got me with that one. All right. Well, there you go. We're all going to stay smarter than AI. We got some feedback. We got an email that came to us at currentgeek@gmail.com. We recommend you use that email liberally. Use it all the time. Send us your thoughts, your questions.
Conservatively.
Love this one. Another nice short and to the point one.
Don't bring politics.
Yeah, you don't have no politics. Yeah. Showalter is his name. Sent this in. I doubt this is the comedian who made...
Buck Showalter, the baseball coach?
Oh, is that an actual guy?
Yeah.
I'm thinking of... Dave, who helped make the Wet Hot American Summer? There's a Showalter guy in that. Anyway, I doubt it's him either.
Michael Showalter.
Yeah, there you go. Hi, CG crew. In 2016, in 2016, I can't talk. Is 2016 the year we hit peak superhero movies and we start to not want to see them anymore? Ooh, how apropos to our earlier conversation. It does feel a little like saturation. Point a little. It doesn't mean I don't want to see all these things. I do. I'm more excited about the other one, the DC one that isn't Superman. What's the other one? The
Suicide Squad.
I'm more excited about that. Obviously, because I can't remember the name.
Margot just looks. She looks
insane.
Nails it.
Oh, she looks so perfect for it.
So good.
Like everything about that is ringing right to me. And I really am excited about Civil War and everything Marvel's doing, and you know all this stuff. But are we guys at this like? Saturation point?
I'll put it to you this way. If you think 2016 is bad, check out the slate for 2017.
Yeah,
like, this isn't even the beginning of it. It's just going to expand and go on the way that comic books always have. By the time I'm 80 years old, they will have done the whole Secret Wars, put them back together, done the whole thing. I mean, it's just never going to end.
Yeah.
Never going to end.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think the peak is still coming in the next couple of years. Mm-hmm. And then it will start to, like, you know, only the hardest core comic book movie fans will continue to go.
Or at the very least, and Ro, I want to get your take on this because you're a big comic book guy, but at the very least, you'll just start to hear some disdain. Not that it'll see a giant dip. It's not like they're going to go from, you know, $500 million domestic gross movies down to 20 million or something, but there's just going to be some backlash and the internet will be where it is first, like it always is. And there'll be people, and they probably already are people who are doing this, but you know, they'll start to be more vocal sort of like, really, another one? You guys are making a MODOK movie? Like, there's just going to start to be some disgruntled response, whereas, you know, up till now, it's been pretty universally excited about for everybody. So, Ro, what do you think?
I think it's all about variety as far as I'm concerned. I mean, there can be 10, 15, 20 comic book movies in the same year, as long as those movies are diverse as far as the stories they're trying to tell, the characters that they're introducing to people that are new with the content. There's nothing wrong with having too many comic book movies, as long as all of those comic book movies aren't trying to tell very similar stories. Mm-hmm. And if you look at what we have for 2016, Deadpool is definitely a very different movie than Batman versus Superman. Mm-hmm. Suicide Squad is very different from those two also. So I'd say that this is far from the peak. If we do reach a peak, it's not going to be for at least another 3 or 4 years, in my opinion. I don't think we peak out on this until we get to the whole two-part Infinity War Avengers event that Marvel's planning.
Well, right. Maybe that's where the problem will crop up, is too much sequels. And
we might not peak out, but we might crowd out of the actual movie release schedule. Like, that's where it might actually reach peak, not necessarily in people's interest for it, but in the actual amount of movies that can be squeezed in a theater over the course of the year. Deadpool is coming out in February. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Superman v Batman, unless I am mistaken, is coming out in March.
Yeah. Yep.
Like, yeah, there's a reason they're in those sort of more fallow months, is because the slate is entirely taken up by already established properties.
And then you wedge something like Star Wars in there, and it makes everybody scramble for new dates. And
yeah
it gets real.
You won't
weird.
See comic book movies in December. You'd be hard pressed to find one try to do it in December unless they do like first week of December.
Yeah, and then it gets harder from there. Like, whoever's releasing in March, well, I mean, what do we have, this the Warcraft movie in June? They've had to work so hard to try to find a window that can be theirs and not mm-hmm. compete with something with a bigger mind share. And it's just, I don't know how they do it anymore. And I think this all fulfills an old forecast from the show forecast prediction we had forever ago, Tom, before any of these things happened. Boy, we've known each other for a long time. Anyway, where we suggested that, I don't remember the exact episode or who said it, but we suggested that that this is where movies were going to go. They were going to be these giant, big, loud popcorn affairs, and that was what would drive the industry. And no longer would it be the King's Speech with, you know, or I'm not.
The King's Speech didn't drive the industry.
It's a bad example. Yeah. Yeah.
I think back when we made that prediction, comic book movies were still new. Yeah. And it was still questionable whether, you know, making an Iron Man 2 was a good idea or not, you know, and now it's like no brainer.
Yeah. Now it all makes sense. Well, anyway, we hope that helped you, show Walter, with your question. And I don't think we've hit it yet, but 2017, check back with us then.
He's our show, Walter.
Ah, see? Mm. He's not into meth, though. It's fine.
Where's Walter?
That's going to do it for the show. Again, currentgeek@gmail.com is the email address. And that is it. We're going to thank our guests, though, because they were rad and awesome. And Ro, I want to give you a chance to tell fine folks where they can find Realm Maintenance and everything else you have going on.
Sure, you can find me on Twitter at RoWow, that's R-H-O-W-O-W, and I do a little podcast. If you play games that are made by Blizzard Entertainment and you want to find podcasts for those games, check out my podcast, which talks all about them. Go to realm-maintenance.com or just look up Realm Maintenance on your podcast app.
Ro is a widely respected, as a fellow Blizzard podcaster, everyone knows who Ro is. We all know who Ro is because he talks about us and what we have going on, and he's this great barometer for whether or not we're up on stuff, and I love it. So good job on that stuff, man.
Thanks for having me on again. It's been a pleasure being on this show. It's one of my bucket list things to be on the Frog Pants show. So
oh well, good.
You.
I'm sorry it took so long for us to freaking do it. Jenny, what's going on? You always have something.
Oh, yeah. So we got Tell It Anyway. We just finished those Crazy Christmas episodes. And by Crazy Christmas episodes, I really mean that. So that's tellitanyway.com. We're doing Hooray for Garbage Town, which is all about living life as a working writer and working assistant in Hollywood. That's run by two of my really good friends that I help produce. And of course, the one, the only Daily Tech News Show with Mr. Tom Merritt.
Oh, I've heard of him. He's right over here, in fact. Tom Merritt, tell us what else is happening.
Let's talk about StarWars.com.
Oh.
Just go there. It's just a little thing that Jenny and Garrett Weinzierl and I cooked up over text message one day. Mm. Maybe you'll like it.
Mm. Yeah, I heard about this, a monthly podcast dedicated to all things Star Wars.
Yeah.
I don't know three people in my life who are more dedicated to the fandom of Star Wars than you three, and that seems like a good fit.
I approve.
So, yeah, it seems like a good idea. So I'm really glad to hear that that even happened. So check that out. And, of course, more from Tom all the time, Ace Detect on Twitter and TomMerritt.com. What else? That's it. There's a million things going on for me, but I will only mention this. If you didn't get one of the books from the Kickstarter from my comic collection, you can now buy softcover editions via the store because all of the Kickstarter ones have shipped. So we have some of those available. If you missed it the first time around, you can get it again, shipping both domestically and internationally. And as soon as all hardcovers are in the hot, sweaty hands of everyone who backed that level, we will have a few of those on the store as well. So you can follow all of that at frogpants.com/store. Don't forget our Crate Joy at frogpants.cratejoy.com. Help Current Geek thrive and survive. That's how we're doing it. We've decided this show is going to be funded by that.
We are box supported.
Yes, we're supported by a box. And if that sounds weird, it's because it is, and it's cool. Get in there. Get on it. Be a part of it.
Get in our box.
Get in our box. Current Geek is our Gmail or our Twitter account. You can find Reddit at currentgeek.reddit.com, currentgeek.com for everything else. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Tom, and our guests. We'll see you next time.
Hi, and welcome back to Legal Geek. This week, we investigate the Sony trademark application for Let's Play. Sony filed a trademark application in late October for Let's Play, specifically for services described as electronic transmission and streaming of video games. A first office action containing a rejection from the trademark office was received at the end of December. Instead of relying on the prior use of Let's Play by many YouTube video creators, the rejection is based on a likelihood of confusion with an earlier registered trademark for Let's Play with a Z, which was registered in 2013 by a small Georgia company. This is typical practice for examining attorneys because it's often easier for them to conduct searches of their own internal systems to find conflicting similar marks than look for external evidence like the widespread use in YouTube videos. However, such rejections can often be overcome with arguments or minor amendments to the application. That may not be an easy option for Sony here, as the prior registration is for very similar goods and services. Specifically, to provide online and offline opportunities for video game enthusiasts to meet and participate in the live video game tournaments. There's a potential important difference in Sony providing content to just be watched, and the Georgia company letting consumers actively participate and play. That could open a door for argument or amendment to the description of services that would allow this trademark application from Sony to be allowed. Even in a close case like this, there's perhaps a 50-50 chance this rejection is overcome. But that won't end the process, as an allowed trademark is published for opposition before a final registration, and the public has 30 days to file oppositions. Given the now public nature and seeming outcry over this application, there's little doubt one or more oppositions would be filed, based on Let's Play being generic or merely descriptive in this field. What's interesting is that the YouTube Let's Play videos were around the lot in 2013 as well, when the Georgia company registered its trademark. So hypothetically, Sony could buy out this company's rights, and then try to enforce those, even if their own application submarines. The bottom line is, Sony may make it past the current refusal, but it seems unlikely that a final registered trademark will result in the end. Nevertheless, even if they obtain some rights by their own application, or by buying someone else's rights, Sony would likely would just use this as a positive marketing tool, rather than as an offensive weapon against YouTube content creators. As such moves would risk losing the trademark in litigation challenges, while also leading to a likely massive negative PR hit. Thanks for listening. Please provide feedback and segment suggestions to me on Twitter at BuckeyeFitzy.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.